I am not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot. I'ma get a scholarship to King's College. I probably should.
Oh, hello, and welcome back to the Second Shot Podcast. It's definitely called Second Shot and not the Second Shot Podcast, but, you know, we'll go with it.
But we are the Second Shot
we
Podcast.
We are the one that's not the conservative one that's all about guns.
It's it's not our name, but we are the...
We are the leading premier Second Shot Podcast.
Yes.
Capital T, Second Shot?
Capital S, capital S, capital P.
We are the SS podcast.
Yes.
Official. We are not. You are not that podcast.
Okay. We are very much an SS. We're an SS group. You know that.
Oh, no.
I don't know.
My name is George Dunn. What's your name?
My name.
Like we've never done this before.
Nice to meet you, George Dunn. My name is Devin Neeson. This is the 41st episode.
We'd sit next to each
other. Nice to meet you.
It's like when you sit next to someone in class never actually introduce yourself.
I do that sometimes in social settings where, like, if you get to know someone and you're, like, friendly with, like, at my job all the time, like, build up a relationship with the regulars and stuff, but you never ask their name, but you find out all about their hobbies and stuff and their life and when their parents die and when their kids have to get surgery on their eyeballs, but you never ask their name. And then it gets too far to the point where you can't ask them, but also... You can't talk to them anymore because you know you're going to get found out about not knowing their name.
You get to a point where it's like embarrassing to ask.
Yeah. And so I can't even talk to them. Yeah. Like, I don't want to, I don't even
kind of like the
situation.
Way we're like waiting to introduce the guest, but now I'm like waiting to see how long I could take it before it gets really awkward.
What is his name again?
I don't know.
I can't think of it.
Steven Weber?
Wachowski?
Mike Wachowski, that's it. It's Mike Wachowski.
Mike Wachowski.
We have our guest, Mike Wachowski, on here.
From stlouis.com.
Steven Weber from Wings?
Yes.
I'll be
Weber
that guy.
Steven Weber is my go-to character name for any character.
That guy, that guy had a good career.
He's
still making, like, syndication money. He was on a really funny episode of Party Down.
Yes, he was.
And, I like Steven Weber. He's a very funny Twitter presence, too.
Yeah. Well, that voice you just heard is comedian and noted Halloween hater Chris Wanowski.
That's it.
And Mike would have worked. Michael is my middle name, so that would I would have taken that. That would have been fine. Well, and
I'll think of that. For
you do look like a Monsters, Inc. character.
Yeah. I thought you were just going to say you look like a monster. It's like, ugh, I do.
They're adorable and charming.
As you say George, like you have this little couple of tufts of hair off the back of your head that make you look like the bad guy from Monsters, Inc.
and here's a fun fact. I did have blue hair in college.
There you go.
Did you actually?
I did. So,
were you auditioning for My Chemical Romance?
Kind of. There was a period, I don't talk about this a lot, but there was a period in my life where my image overlapped with Guy Fieri's. And so I had like the goatee and like blonde, spiky hair. I bleached my hair, and then when I went to college, I started dyeing it. Like,
well, you say that like we're supposed to be surprised.
No, it's not. It's like unlike Guy Fieri, I realized this. There's no real longevity in this image. So it took a very nice woman that I was.
Hey, I'm Chris Wernowski. Welcome to Cleveland.com. Taking you to information country or town.
The diners, drive-ins, and dives.
We've all done things in the late 90s and early 2000s that we're not proud of. So
I still do most of those things. Like listen to Chumbawamba and Bare Naked Ladies.
I think we've talked about like all of our hairstyles in the past on the show before.
I had pretty cool hair though.
George has had a really weird mohawk that he never
I had mohawk. I had the parma
did the work
perm
to put up.
I think I saw it. You had a picture of that on your Facebook at one point. The mohawk.
The mohawk. There's not many good pictures, but yeah, I did. But I also had my parma perm one, which was just like a puffy in the back, but like swoopy in the front. It was real bad.
I had a bowl cut at one point.
Ooh.
And a flat top.
I
was paying homage to my grandfather at a flat top. He's a military dude, but it was during my fascist stage of rebellion.
I was thinking you were like doing Street Fighter cosplay or something.
That was, yes. Which one was, I was Guile. Yes, that was me. That was me, Fat Guile.
Is that
Guile Fieri?
There we go.
There it is. That's why we do this, folks.
I had a flat top once during the Cavs playoff run. I was trying to be Iman, And it worked. That was the year they won the championship, all because of my hair. And then also in like eighth grade, I think I had like a curly high top with that was frosted blonde.
Ooh,
because of the whole Cisco phase, I was like, I got to do that.
Remember that 6 months when
I want to see thongs?
That 6 months when everyone thought Cisco might be an actor, like he kind of threatened us with "Get Over It."
I don't remember that.
With Ben Foster and I think Kirsten Dunst, is it?
Really? Oh, my God.
Yeah, I was kind of obsessed with that movie.
Oh my, we have to do an episode on
it. Because it opens with Vitamin C singing, "We will Love Will Bring Us Together." But they're like dancing in the street with Vitamin C. And then Cisco is Ben Foster, whatever his name is best friend. Like,
okay.
Because he's the black friend.
I didn't know Vitamin C had another song. I was just thinking about her one song the other day. That
is that her song, though?
No, it's a cover. Captain Tennille, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Like, yeah, like, just by all the players in this, this had to be made
98
to 2001,
I think Mila Kunis is in it as well.
Oh, geez.
There's a very specific scene I remember where they're at the pool, and it's just Kirsten Dunst and Mila Kunis just in bikinis, and I was like, yeah.
That's for me.
That's, oh my God, you had a, like, you don't hear a lot of people admitting they had a Cisco phase.
Hey, it's not a phase, it's a lifestyle. I still like thongs, and I've been thinking about bleaching my hair again.
Cisco, Cisco was at Firefest, right? He was the one that kind of put that together? Was it Herbal, my thing? Who was that?
You're thinking of Ja Rule.
Ja Rule. They're the same.
George is racist.
It's all black. No, that was same. Like, yeah. I mean, they're kind of cut from the same sort of hip-hop cloth, I think.
Yeah, no, they are.
Yeah.
Same era. Same era.
Well, we are going to be talking about Def Leppard.
Yeah, we're going to go back to the late 80s, I believe, is when this album
came out. Another era of bad music. Well, and
the
80s
were great
music.
For music, just not music. not the avenue that we're going down tonight.
And I'm gonna probably try to dispel the notion that Def Leppard was a bad band in that era, because it's weird because all the bands that sort of came out with albums in that time kind of had shitty albums, you know, like the Rolling Stones, like Elton John. And it's like, if you think about like a band like Bon Jovi, which I know there's a lot of like people who are like pissed that they're up for the Rock Hall, but it's like, when you listen to their songs, if those songs would come out in like the 70s, they would be like fucking Bruce Springsteen. You know, I mean, there's just like songs about like working class people and, you know, meeting women and driving cars. And it's, you know, it's like, I feel like the production on that on that first album that they put out was, it just got them kind of lumped into hair
metal.
Talking
about Bon Jovi?
About Bon Jovi. And it's like, you look at a band like Def Leppard who like put out three really good albums before their big, big, big album, that Hysteria album. It, like, they were just like a simple rock band. I mean, they were like AC/DC. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until they met, it was Shania Twain's ex-husband.
Shania Twain.
Yes, it was Shania Twain. Wasn't until they met Shania Twain. His name escapes me, but he was like a big...
Shania Twain.
Yes.
Nailed it.
I think that was his name.
Well, before we get deeper into the Def Leppard talk, we do have a voicemail we got this week before we take our break. I want to play it. It's pretty interesting.
I have not heard this yet.
It's kind of groundbreaking, honestly. If you ask me, but who knows?
I'm
just kind
intrigued,
of my own. So we'll play this real quick, and then we'll go to a break, and we'll come back with some Def Leppard.
Hey, Bruce, this is Gail from the book club. We're gonna have book club tomorrow at 4:00 in the puzzle room. Thank you.
Was that? She was talking about Bruce Wayne.
Yes. So
did we get someone or said Batman's.
We intercept
Bruce Wayne.
Batman's book club meeting numbers
with Gail.
With Gail. I listened to that.
What?
I got that notification, and I listened to it. And I just started crying, laughing.
I was waiting for something, and no, that was legitimately just the wrong number.
Wait, so that was you? That was like for somebody else. They called your phone.
Oh, yeah. Well, they called. They called our number. Our
podcast
Google Voice
line.
Number.
Oh, geez.
So
I don't know if that was someone.
Sorry, like, Bruce and Gail. Wow. Bruce, if you are listening, they are holding the book club meeting in the puzzle room. I'm assuming, you know, there's puzzles in there.
I hope that works out.
Or this is a piece of the puzzle, and there's a bigger puzzle to
piece together. That's why I was thinking, maybe this is Bruce Wayne. This is the secret. Gail. Who's Gail?
Or maybe it's some viral marketing for the Justice League.
What a swanky house you must live in to have a puzzle room.
Right?
Right.
I feel like it's a library.
Like, in a library?
Like Wayne Mansion.
Yeah, right? It's like, oh, it's near the gift wrapping room.
Oh, my God.
And it's third
near my
solarium.
Cat's room.
Yeah. No, don't go into Princess's room.
She doesn't like it when you mess things up.
Mm.
This is the St. Louis chess room.
It has the Star Wars chess in here.
But don't touch it.
All right, let's go take a break real quick, and we'll come back, and we'll talk about white trash metal.
From the book club. We're going to have book club tomorrow at 4 o'clock in the puzzle room. Thank you.
It's so funny to me. Like, I don't know why you guys aren't laughing more.
Now, like, I just thought it was at 4 o'clock in the puzzle room. Maybe they were trying to get together, have a little 420 smoke sesh, and, you know, you need that 20 minutes to get together. You got blunt, you got weed. Put them together.
I think Gail's really
420 comes on.
I think she's more of a kratom kind of person.
Kratom.
Kratom.
Was it Kratom or Kratom? I've always
heard
Kratom.
That's where Superman's from, right? Krypton.
Yes.
Well, I wonder what book they were reading.
That's another one.
Girl on the Train. Is there a sequel to Girl on the Train?
It's a Bruce book club will be in the puzzle room. That's, I think, the title.
Maybe, please, yeah, maybe. In the puzzle room.
In the puzzle room.
You let me borrow, or I let you borrow, if you give a mouse a cookie, could you please bring it back?
To the puzzle room. Bring the cookie to the puzzle room.
It was probably like Peter Rabbit, something very simple.
Very, I'm trying to think of other books. I can't think of a book.
Can't think of a book.
My mom, I was at
a
family get together the other day, and my mom, we were talking about Stephen King, and my mom just stops and like turns to me. She's like, George, have you ever read a book? I'm like, yeah, Mom, I've read several books. Fucking weird passive aggressive. Like,
was she being serious or did she misspeak?
She misspoke. I think she was asking if I ever read a Stephen King book.
Oh.
But the way she phrased it, she looked so like genuinely confused if I've ever read a book before.
That's fantastic. You're like, oh,
it hurt.
No, I only watch movies, Mom.
Like, it's kind of true at this point. But so, yeah, we listened to Hysteria. Is that how you say it? Hysteria. Mm-hmm.
Hysteria.
Def Leppard. Def Leppard.
Def Leppard?
Def Leppard.
But Leppard is spelled L-E-P-P-A-R-D.
Yeah, and Def is spelled D-E-F. Like,
is it because they're British?
Like most Def.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
They were ahead of their time in that vein.
That's a good point.
Prince was doing it before them.
Was he?
He was doing
He was probably doing everything before everybody.
The letter U and the number 2 and all that stuff.
That is true.
I Will Die For You.
So you listened to the album, huh?
I did. I listened to it, probably 1.5 times, because the first time it kind of nothing stuck.
I listened to the whole thing, except I did listen to the intro song again on the way
here. Women.
Did you realize like how many of those songs were like top 40 songs?
The only one I know is Pour Some Sugar On Me.
Okay, so... Not to reveal anything, but how old are you?
28.
And how old are you?
28.
So when that album came out, like I think like something like five of those songs charted and were huge hits.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven of them have their own Wikipedia page, which is for like, yeah, I mean, there's seven hits, hit singles. They don't place any place or show any placing, but yes, seven of them are like bigger singles.
So Mutt Lange was the producer, and he produced a lot of like big rock albums, and he was known for being like the recording sessions. If you go back and you watch their like behind the music about this, I mean, they were brutal recording sessions. Really? And they had a one-armed drummer who had to learn how to drum with his feet. Mm-hmm. And so it's
what happened with that car accident, by the way?
Yeah, I guess he was driving too fast and he was trying to pass another car and he got thrown out the...
Yeah, he rolled a car and it like pinned him and it like his just arm fell off.
Shit.
And the way that he tells the story is that like he, like while he was in the hospital, he sort of came up with the idea of how to like drum with their feet. I mean, they were a wild ass band, and that's like, people sort of write them off as corny, but in the early days, I mean, they're like from like working class England, and they, you know, sort of came up just listening to like Bowie and like Mott the Hoople and all those sort of bands. And those first three albums are just hard rock albums. If you go back and you listen to like Bring It On the Heartbreak or like High and Dry in those older albums, they were just a rock band, and like I said earlier, like the AC/DC vein. And this album was different though, because they like Mutt Lange basically told them, I want to make the hard rock equivalent of Thriller, which is I want every song on this album to be a hit.
It's pretty high hopes.
It was, and it took them.
My phone just randomly wants to play the song. Armageddon.
And for licensing purposes, you probably should. No, I'm kidding. But
we have Hamilton at the beginning of each episode. Like,
yeah, you're not worried. Not worried about getting sued.
What are they going to take my $0?
Well, you got a great Iron Man 2 poster in there. So it's no, but it was they. And I think the recording process, I think it took him 3 years to put out this album. I remember because I was really young when this came out. And so I was like 8 or 9, and it was one of those things that I sort of came to because my brother was like way into hair metal, mm-hmm. and like big, like he had a mullet and he got a perm at one point. I mean, he was like,
that's big.
He got like a perm that he was mad about because it was like really tight.
Is your brother my stepdad?
And he might be, who knows? But it, you know, and it was one of those things where I was like the younger brother, and you know, I just sort of absorbed the tastes of my older brother because I thought he's cool and whatever. And, you know, I mean, I think if like I had come to this music as like a 22-year-old in college, I probably would have been like, that's not Radiohead. But for some reason, it's like, and I have like, you know, like friends that are in bands and like hipster dudes who fuck it will like fight you if you say anything bad about Def Leppard. And so I remember when MTV started like promoing, because the first single was Women, was the first
song. Yeah.
And when they started playing, I mean, they were having like these, it was an event. I mean, it was like a big deal. And when it came out, I mean, it was amazing because they would put out a new video like every 6 months, and the longevity of this album. I mean, they were putting out videos for new videos for songs off of it like 2 years later. Mm-hmm. Wow. You don't really see that anymore. You know, most bands grind out a new album every year. This thing went on. I mean, I was
every Weezer every year.
Yeah. Oh Jesus. Or like Guided by Voices. It's like 10 in a month and a half. And so it was like, I mean, they really kind of accomplished what they set out to do, which was make this like hit laden rock album. But in a weird way, it sort of changed. Like the album came out like right at the precipice of like hair metal. So like then you started to see like, you know, that's when sort of Poison started coming around, and then they kind of got lumped into that. And when they really, I mean, it wasn't like a purposeful thing, because, you know, hair metal became sort of like this LA, like very image based sort of thing. And that's really not what this album sort of set out to do. Mm-hmm. It just happened to sort of exist, and its shelf life kind of extended into hair metal. And
I'm trying to think of like, so there was Motley Crue, there was Poison, there was, Iron Maiden kind of got lumped in there, but I think they're kind of doing something a little different than most of these guys. What else was there? I'm trying to think of, like, you said Bon Jovi kind of got lumped in there.
Yeah, and so it was like, but then, like, so they were sort of, like, first generation, and mm-hmm. so then, like right at, like, 89, like, 87, 88, 89, you started seeing, like, Warrant and Slaughter and Trickster and Danger Danger and, like, all these bands that were influenced by mm-hmm. these early hard rock bands who were, like, whose influences would be considered, like, way more pure. So you had the bands like Motley Crue, who took a lot of cues from, like, Black Sabbath mm-hmm. and from, you know, like, other hard rock bands like the 70s. And it's sort of like, you know, you always – I mean, we kind of went through this with, like, indie bands in, like, the sort of mid part of the first part of this decade – or this century mm-hmm. because it's like you look at, like, a band like the Arcade Fire and their influences – aren't necessarily rock influences, you know, and there's a really famous essay that Rock Critic wrote about how, like, far removed Arcade Fire was from, like, you know, blues music. Their influences were more rock musicians who were influenced by early black musicians. So mm-hmm. they're essentially sort of a more watered down version of, like, a Bruce Springsteen. And so that's, like, hair metal sort of became this thing. And don't get me wrong. I mean, Pour Some Sugar on Me is a song about, you know, fucking. Like, I mean,
it's my favorite song about a man asking another man to come on him.
Right. Yeah. And it's sort of, you know, I mean, it was very tongue in cheek, but then the hair metal aesthetic became, like, really raunchy and really, I mean, you go back and you look at the videos that came out in, like, 88, 89, and it was like, you know, Motley Crue was doing, like, Girls, 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 mm-hmm. and it all became about, like, strip clubs and the L.A. scene and, like, the, you know, the Viper Room and the Sunset Strip and all that stuff. And it sort of just became this sort of debauched nightmare that, you know, eventually sort of got so big and so overbloated that, you know, grunge came in to sort of say, like, hey, all right, we're going to clear this out.
I'm curious because, like, Pyromania came out in 83, and that was, like, considered their first, like, big album.
Yeah.
And then this one is 87, mm-hmm. which I've always kind of thought was, you know, 87, 88 was kind of the downfall. That was, like, the end of the hair metal. Because then you had Metallica and you had, you know, Alice in Chains and all that crap coming out. Grunge was starting to come out of that.
But Metallica was changing, you know? I mean, Metallica sort of became more mainstream. I remember dancing to Metallica songs at school dances.
Black Album was like 92 or 93.
But yeah, I have slow danced to Unforgiven. Like, you know, I mean, it's like, so, you know, I mean, like,
I don't know what high school you went to.
I went to a really rural fucking white trash high school. And
slow dance to Women and
yeah,
Unforgiven.
But then I, like, in my junior year of high school, I moved to a, like, an almost all black high school in the middle of a big city, and you know, and I was introduced to, like, hip hop and mm-hmm. stuff. So it was like, I mean, people sort of credit, like, Nirvana for sort of cleansing the sort of musical landscape. Hip hop really kind of gets overlooked as being a part of that too, because, I mean, Nirvana was sort of derivative of punk rock and other things, but hip-hop was something completely different.
Yeah, it was like a sludgy punk rock. That's all it was.
Yeah, I mean, it was a different version of the same song. You know, mm-hmm. it was something we'd heard of. And not that it wasn't great. And, you know, I mean, all music is derivative. But hip-hop was like, at that time, it was, and like it is now, I mean, it was sort of like, it was eye-opening to, I mean, especially me, like a Midwestern kid who had no idea what was going on in, like, L.A. and all that stuff. I mean, people say it, and it's almost cliche at this point, but it was like the news, you know? I mean, it was, like, socially relevant, and it was, for me, it was one of those things where it was like, I'm not getting this from Def Leppard, you know, and bands like it. It's like, Pour Some Sugar on Me. What the fuck, man? It's like, you got, you know, now you got NWA coming out talking about police brutality, and it's like, well, this seems important.
What about song number 8 is very relevant in today's political environment? Don't Shoot Shotgun. Don't do that.
Well, I was going to say, Gods of War is a weird one because it's all this, like, Ronald Reagan stuff going on in the background. It's like, America won't back down. It's
But it was also, yeah, I mean, this is a very Cold War thing, too. Yeah. I mean, you got to think, if you want to talk about, like, a really crazy exposition of, like, where the music business was at that time, go back and look at, like, there was this, like, Concert for Freedom that happened like right after like the fall of communism and the Soviet Union, where they sent all these hair bands over to Russia to do this giant concert.
You know what Soviets like?
And now they're
men dressed like women.
Dude, it I think it was the Ozzy Osbourne Behind the Music where they talked about that plane ride, because it was like it was all the big hair metal bands of that era on one plane. And I mean, it was a shit show.
That plane went down. That's the real day the music died.
How has that movie not been made?
Oh, I don't know, man.
Quentin Tarantino needs to get on that right now.
That's true. That needs to be made. Like that seems like a really less shitty Argo. Like,
how like American hair metal went and represented like right at the fall of the communism. I mean,
if they can make a movie or that Battle of the Sexes where it's like, I don't like women, I'm going to play tennis against one. Like,
but what's really great about it is there was a Russian hair metal band named Gorky Park. And it is so fucking bad. It's so bad. You got to, like, when you're done, like, look it up when we're done.
Educated about that.
It's so bad. But it was like, you know, I mean, they'd sort of taken their cues from, you know, what American and bands were doing. But it was like, you know, probably 4 KGB agents. I'm pretty sure, like, one of them was, like, Vladimir Putin.
Pour some sugar on the KGB.
Pour some sugar on the means of production.
Pour some borscht on me.
Pour some sugar, but evenly dispersed.
But once a month, get in line.
Yeah,
keep the walk.
Yeah, but then the Gods of War song is interesting because it's like, oh yeah, this was like this. We were still kind of like in the tail end of the Cold War, so yeah. It's such a weird song. But it was, go ahead.
No, I mean, just like this time for music was so weird because so much music came out, mm-hmm. like in the 80s. Like there was, we have it now, but it's, you know, with the hindsight. You know, you had punk rock, you had, you know, stuff like Joy Division. I mean, Joy Division was pretty much over by the middle of the 80s, but like, New Order. Yeah, like, I mean, and you have hair metal. And I mean, even like you have bands like Metallica, like I just sat listening to this album thinking, God, this is why people thought Metallica were cool in the 80s, because these guys are so not cool.
Yeah.
I mean, like at the time, I'm sure they were. But
the thing is like we think of Metallica being cool, but I mean, they're four dorks.
They're fucking lame as shit.
The thing about metal is like most people who are in metal, I mean, metal is like really dependent on like scary imagery and like, you know, but I mean, to be like a guitar, people who play guitars that way, that takes a lot of like isolation and like just time nerding out. Yeah, it's like go and watch go watch Japanese dudes playing like metal and it's fucking amazing, but it's like these dudes probably never leave their homes.
Yeah.
And it's
practice music all
so,
the time.
So yeah. So I mean, it's like, you know, it was interesting because it's like, living in a really small town at the time when this music came out, I mean, it did speak to like that part of America for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. I think it gave them like really weird ideas about like what big city life in LA was like. But, you know, I think that for whatever reason, the idea of just like getting off work and having a beer and like partying with your lady, I think that speaks to people in a way.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think Pour Some Sugar on Me is sort of like, you don't have to think about it. People are, you know, sort of befuddled by the popularity of a band like Nickelback. But I mean, not to defend it, but, you know,
they still keep going. You know, like,
it's for whatever reason, it speaks to people. And it's like, it doesn't make it good. And that's, you know, and people conflate the idea of popularity with quality, which is bullshit. But I think that, you know, for whatever reason, you know, people who identify as music nerds or music snobs, you know, tend to forget that like not everything's made for you, and it's not like it's not something that's really designed to appeal to you. It's you know, it's like like girl bands. I mean I'm not supposed to like that stuff. I mean, maybe I find a song catchy or something, but it's like, you know,
Spice Girls, but it definitely wasn't made for me.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it was like, it was for my niece, you know? And it's like, and so when you see like rock critics who you know, apply like the same standard they would for like Fleetwood Mac to Avril Lavigne. I mean, right. It's like you're really sort of doing your audience a disservice by not realizing that, A, this might not be for you, and B, you know, you really have to understand what music is designed for before you decide to be critical of it.
Yeah. And a lot of times that's the only part that is looked at is kind of the style
mm-hmm.
and the genre. And mm-hmm. if people don't like a particular genre, it's just all automatically put out in the cold. Like, they're not going to touch it. But I don't know. I think about that a lot, especially doing this show. You got to look at things like technically and what they're playing is like. There was a lot of like really cool riffs on this album, I thought, and really catchy riffs that are like, that's musically
Woman Starts pretty
really
good.
Awesome.
Like,
and then, like you said, the one arm drummer and stuff, like,
yeah. And they were a very good band, and they are still, I mean, they still play, and they still play these songs. They play them competently. Oh, it's, wow. It's interesting. I mean, they've had a guitarist die.
This was like the last album before he died, right?
Yeah, Steve Clark died. I mean, he basically drank himself to death after this album, and he was actually part of the reason why it took 4 years.
They have all these albums, but they're all so spaced apart because it's 87 to 92, 92 to 96 isn't terrible, but I mean, that's, you know, 90s metal, you know.
But part of it is that, like, you know, Pyromania was successful enough where they didn't have to rush out an album. You know, mm-hmm. now the music business is so untenable that you basically have to put out an album.
Well, it was a different world. I think we talked about that. What are we talking about? We were talking about it on an episode earlier where it's like, you could just, I can't remember. But you can coast off of an album mm-hmm. back then. Like, you could just, like, because you didn't have, it wasn't a demand for content mm-hmm. all the time, you know, as someone who makes content. But, you know, like, it's, you don't have to, you could fucking do.
Well, but the economics of music has changed too, because a lot yeah. of, like, artists don't make money off albums anymore. They make money off touring. Mm-hmm. And so when you tour nowadays, you know, it's imperative that you have new material to tour. It's, yeah. you know, it's sort of like the comedian. It's like, you know, once you do a special, yeah. you got to start writing new material.
So that's why when you're Perfect Circle, you can charge $250 for a ticket.
Right.
And go fuck yourself.
But it's, you know, but it's like, it's interesting that this album is a full-fledged studio album because, I mean, yeah.
It's very overproduced.
It's super overproduced, but but again, I don't know that it would have, something like this could not have been made at any other time, I think, in history, because I think for whatever technology was available at that time.
Not with a straight face, at least.
Right. I mean, it was like, you know, I mean, when The Darkness came out, everybody was like, well, this is tongue in cheek. They're not taking themselves seriously. These guys took his shit serious. And it was, you know, even though they were a wild ass party band, but it, you know, they went all in on this idea of making this really great album.
Like, this is us.
Yeah.
The show?
Basically.
Yeah. It's a great show.
A lot of crying.
Yeah, there's a lot of crying in this album, too. Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, Devin, what did you, like, just your general, like, overall opinion before we get into, like, closing?
And this is coming from, like, my point of view, obviously, and stuff I like. The first few songs on the album, I was, like, really, like, it. I was really into. I'm into anything that's energetic and just like kind of in your face, badass a little bit. And so I was kind of into it the first like half of the album, and I think that's where all the singles are on.
Yeah.
Like parts of it even had like some hip hop influences, I think, or vice versa, hip hop. Like it just sounded like parts of it sounded like I was listening to like a Run DMC album, you know.
Mm-hmm.
After that, it kind of slowed down and started to feel a little bit more just whiny and romantic. Yeah. But, I mean, that's for some people. But the second half of the album wasn't for me. Kind of rebounded at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean.
It's so long.
Yeah, it's like
62 minutes.
62-minute album, too.
I think it holds the record still of being the longest single record, like the longest length on a single vinyl.
Really?
I think. I don't know if it still does, but it definitely did at the time.
Yeah. I had it on a cassette
Ooh.
That was dubbed off of my brother's cassette.
Nice. Sound quality was great.
Oh, no. It was total shit.
yeah. Like, I think pretty much after Pour Some Sugar on Me, the album kind of just drops off dead.
Yeah.
Armageddon it. It's just a weird thing to say in the first place. Armageddon
it. Yeah. But again, it was like, it was ubiquitous. I mean, they would play those videos back to back on MTV. I mean, it's just hard to imagine. I mean, like, and that was that's the other factor is like MTV. I mean, these are not traditionally attractive men, but these guys were
that was the thing
all
with, like,
over
a lot of hair metal. Like, none of those guys were like attractive. I mean, maybe Tommy Lee, maybe in like a certain light, like, but Axl Rose was not attractive.
Like, it was the attitude and the persona.
Yeah, it was just like, or Twisted Eyeliner. Sister, like any of those guys. I mean, their whole thing was like, oh, we're wearing makeup and wigs and whatever. Like, oh, look how crazy we are. We're definitely not ripping up the New York Dolls. But yeah, it's just like, yeah, Dee Snider is a very unattractive
person. Oh my God. But it's interesting. Like, what I like about this is I actually saw like an interview with Joe Elliott, who's the lead singer of Def Leppard, a couple years ago, and somebody asked him, you know, do you ever get sick of playing Pour Some Sugar on Me? And it's like, you know, I grew up with like Tom York not wanting to ever play Creep in concert, or Jack White refusing to play Fell in Love with a Girl at concert. Joe Elliott's like, that album bought me everything I own.
Yeah.
And he said, I would feel like I was cheating my fans if I didn't play that. And he's like, so why would I feel bad?
I think
there's
a level, I really appreciate that. I think like, I understand why Radiohead wouldn't want to play Creep.
But they do now, too, which is crazy, because I think it's like, you know, for a band that is known for being like overly pretentious and as are its fans, and I'm one of them, at some point you got to throw that red meat out there.
Well,
because
people are paying to come see, listen to your music.
I had a friend say, you know, it's like, fuck Radiohead for thinking that song's bad, because if it weren't for that song, they would not have had an opportunity to do literally everything else they did. And I think, you know, Joe Elliott's attitude about that is like, I still get to go out and play music because of that song. Yeah. It's weird that it became like a stripper's theme. You know, and it's like, it's almost completely associated with that. But it's like, again, you know, he probably makes money off licensing from dance clubs too, you know? So,
yeah, I mean, that song alone could probably bankroll you for the rest of your life.
Yeah. I mean, they're sort of like, I mean, keep in mind, they're sort of like the last generation of like uber rich musicians too. And it's, and I think what happened with them, you know, if you listen to the album that came out after this one, Adrenalize, which I don't think did as well as this album. Mm-hmm. It sounds pretty much the same. It was the first one after their guitarist died. But then in the album that came out in, I think it was 92 or whatever, the album.
Adrenalize is 92 and then Slang is 96.
So when Slang came out, this is right after I got out of high school, they tried to trend, and like there's like a grunge, like kind of a grungier sound to it, and they're trying to be more alternative. Mm-hmm. And it just like nobody liked it. And it was like, you gotta understand, man, like people like you for what you are. And there are some bands that get away with that, you know, like REM could get away with like doing like drastic changes in their tone. You know, U2 tried it and failed. You know, that pop album they put out sucked. And
yeah, I mean, U2's kind of a weird, like, they're their own thing. Like they kind of like experiment, and they have that build up crash burn crash burn thing that they do. I mean, like, it's always bugged me when I like, you can very clearly tell a band is trying to just ape off of whatever's popular at the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I got really bugged when my mom was really into Madonna. Mm-hmm. You know, but it was like 2000s Madonna, mm-hmm. where she's very much just desperately trying to cling to whatever, like the dance thing, the auto tune. You know, the Cher did the same thing.
Quicker,
you know,
than
like,
a ray of light.
Yeah,
my mom, like, played that song all the time.
Yeah, but it's weird. But when you go back and you listen to like a Virgin, like, what people forget about that album is that was, I mean, she had like a real fucking band on that album. Yeah. And you go back
that
and
that album's really good.
That's an amazing album. And it's got great it's like it's got deep cuts in it that are really great. But it's like the musicianship in it. And like, you know, and I feel like she's sort of underrated because, you know, she did a lot of the, you know, directing of what it would sound like. And but it's like the fact that those like really great dance songs were done with like a backing band. I mean, it's as good as any Prince album. And it's amazing.
Depends on the Prince album, but yeah.
And so it's So I think
I'm gonna make a hard stance right there. But my line in the sand.
But I think there's, but you know, and then I think it's just like for whatever reason you sort of like you start trying to maintain relevance, and it's just like people see it and people buy into it. But
right.
But maybe there was a younger generation of people that didn't grow up with older Madonna that really didn't know and didn't care. So
yeah, I mean, especially the 2000s. The 2000s was such a time of like, fuck the past.
Yeah,
you know, we're the future.
Yeah,
and it's like all computers and, but not even, we don't know where our sound's going yet. But we're gonna just go. We're gonna figure it out. Which is admirable. It just all sucked.
Yeah,
you know, like you had Radiohead who was doing, you know, computers and trying to make future music.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I'm a Radiohead fan. But like, I can definitely see why people are like, no Radiohead. I get it. But the 2000s were just such a weird, I don't know where I was going with that.
Boy, 2000s were like a period where I gave a lot of unsolicited lectures about Radiohead.
Yeah. Wait, you're telling me you gave unsolicited lectures about your opinions on things? Oh, the devil,
like,
you say.
It's like you know me. But yeah, it's sort of like that's. I mean, but that's sort of like the great thing about age, like getting older. I mean, I'm almost 39, and it's like now I'm just like, fuck, just like whatever the fuck you want, you know. And yeah, it's like just don't tell me like what I like sucks, and I won't tell you what.
Yeah,
you like,
I've been listening from first to last all week. I can't.
That's great.
What do you guys think about dubstep?
I'm happy to see that they've stopped using it in every movie trailer.
That's true.
Yeah.
Now they're just using all these weird slow covers.
No, my favorite is the movie trailer that starts with a lone piano note.
Yes.
Played ding. Slowly.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much all they did Harry Potter movies started with that.
Force Awakens?
Yeah. I just haven't watched the Force Awakens trailers. I watched the original one just because I'm like, okay, it's Star Wars. But I'm trying. I sat while watching Thor took my glasses off, covered my eyes and my ears at the same time.
So you really don't want to know anything about what happens?
Well, I just don't want the money shots to be ruined. I don't want to see Luke in the Millennium Falcon until I'm watching the movie.
Because
I'm going to cry.
For you.
Yeah, because there's a picture of it on every website I ever go on. Yeah. So, I mean, of course he's going to be in the Millennium Falcon regardless, but like, I want to cry in the theater, not while I'm fucking watching it on my phone. I cry enough in my car.
I need to cry in public for once.
I want to cry alone in a theater surrounded by other grown men crying
feel like
in
a theater.
Kind of
I like kind of went on a date to Force Awakens, and
so you didn't go on a date. Like that's the, you thought it was a date.
Well, I was going to say you and I saw it, but I forgot we didn't.
Let's put it this way. If it was a date, I thought I was being quirky by bringing my Anakin lightsaber.
Anakin? Oh, man. God. It's but, blue one?
Yeah.
With the shitty hilt?
Yeah, the one that
it's
gets handed
at the bottom.
To by... That he gets him. It's in the movie. Come on.
I know, you dummy.
I don't think you can reveal that level of nerd until, like, date 5.
I was hoping, because we'd known each other for a long time, that maybe it'd come across, but no, it just didn't work out.
Well, it's fine. Anyway, yeah. You're in a good situation now, right?
I'm so excited.
I'm going to try it again with my already girlfriend.
All right.
1 month from today.
Yeah.
Oh, is that when it comes out?
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty excited about it.
Very excited. Yeah.
Are you excited about the fact that they've announced that they're going to do like three more, like another like standalone trilogy?
I am excited that Rian Johnson is doing three more.
Yeah.
Well, he's doing the first one at least.
Yeah.
Well, he's going to be. I feel like he's probably going to be overseeing the trilogy. He might have to direct them all, but I am so excited. I'm just excited to see something that's not a Skywalker story.
Yeah.
Or tangentially related to Skywalker.
That'll be cool. I just hope it could be lame and not.
It absolutely could be lame, but related. I mean, it's not like we haven't had a lame Star Wars thing before. So.
It could be like. Def Leppard still making albums in the 2000s.
They put out an album in 2015. Was the last album they put out?
I didn't even know that. I have to look that up. I'm looking that up right now. I just like looking at like Wikipedia reviews, like reception of it, because it's just so funny to me. Because usually, like, I'll look up Nickelback, mm-hmm. and it's all like 4 or 5 stars. I'm like, what the fuck? It's like, all right, they're meeting at its level, but come on, guys. Like,
my brother
2002.
My brother took his daughters to see Def Leppard when they were like 16 and like 17 and bought like VIP passes and got to meet the band, and he has like a framed poster of
That's
them
crazy.
And it's I mean it's like
have you ever seen them live?
Me? I have not, actually. I wish I could have seen it. I think they toured with Motley Crue, like, in recent years.
I think I remember that.
And my buddy, I have a buddy who's, like, I went to college with, and we're both sort of music nerds. And he told me Motley Crue was one of the greatest concerts he has ever seen.
Like, modern Motley Crue?
It was 4 or 5 years ago. Like, really? Yeah, and he went and saw them in St. Louis, and he's like, it's just, like... And it's, like, what's amazing about it, what was funny about it is that, like, so, you know, Motley Crue, he's just, like, tubby old dudes mm-hmm. now, you know? And, like, yeah. And they're, like, you know, still, like, trying to get women to, like, show their boobs at show. And, like, you know, and it's, like, these are, like, young, like, a younger, slightly yeah. more woke audience that are just like, nah. Mm-hmm. He was like, that was, like.
You don't think the people in the front row are also the tubby old women?
Yeah, no. I mean, it was like, he was like, it took them a very long time to get somebody to do that. And I was just like, yeah, it's a different time now. People don't do that.
And they're older and they do things more slowly now.
I went to go see Rob Zombie once and someone showed their boobs, but I think that's the only time I've ever seen someone take their top off at a show.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've been to some weird shows. Like, I've been to shows where men, but like the lead singer of a show just like gets bare naked and he's just dick dangling around while he's singing. Like, but no one else took their top off.
I think I went to Kid Cudi, Asher Roth, and B.O.B. at House of Blues, and there was a chick on some dude's shoulders mm-hmm. that was just flashing the entire show, like almost the entire time.
I feel like there's got to be a rule about it now, especially at a place like House of Blues. They'd be like, you do it, you're kicked out or something.
Possibly, but
I'm sure they're pretty lax on it, but like...
Yeah.
I worked at I took a hiatus from journalism in 2011, and I worked at a music venue in St. Louis, and you could not get on somebody's shoulders. I mean, there's like, I think they're more like...
Such an insurance thing.
Yeah, though. Sort of like liability. Yeah. I mean, but what's interesting is like during this era, St. Louis was actually the site of the Guns N' Roses riot. And so
there was a riot.
Yeah. So like 25, I think it was 25 years ago.
A run riot.
Def Leppard reference.
Yeah.
But he, there's like, this venue opened. This is like the big outdoor venue in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. It was called the Riverport Amphitheater. And okay. Guns N' Roses played their literally third show at this venue. And like, I think it was like, you know, Axl Rose showed up like 2 hours late. So the audience was trashed, right?
Oh my God.
So there's this guy like standing there, and like at the 25 year anniversary of this, the Riverfront Times in St. Louis did a like an oral history of this whole thing, and they interviewed the guy that took the picture, and he was just like this biker dude who just took his camera to all these concerts and took pictures, and you know, it was just sort of like a hobbyist. And Axl Rose saw the guy and was like, hey, take that away from him. And then the security didn't do anything, which, by the way, the same security company that did security at the place that I worked in 2011. And he dove off of the stage and like punched the guy and then went on stage and was like, thanks for the lame ass security, like broke the microphone on the ground and then walked off. And the place went crazy. They tore the seats out of it, set fire to them.
Oh my God.
There were people like having sex. I mean, it was like, it was like evidence that like, we are just like one small, like we're one like record scratch away from society just fucking devolving into bedlam. And he was prosecuted. He was convicted
fucking
of
good.
He was convicted of a crime and was banned from playing in the city, I think, for a while. But when they announced their reunion, they put out a concert t-shirt. I think it was like a concert t-shirt that had all these dates in it, and it had a St. Louis date, but it had it crossed out. Like, he refused to play in that city. They played their first show in that city since that happened this year.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, he really held a grudge about that shit. And it was like, I honestly, if anybody's listening to this, like, and I urge you to read it, the oral history of that thing is amazing. It was such a shit show.
Is there anyone worse than Axl Rose in the hair metal scene? I'm trying to think
really
of someone who's
that hold
like,
a grudge.
He's not even good.
But no, you like, gotta understand, Appetite for Destruction is a great album.
I get that.
Like, but it was an utter piece of shit. I mean, you probably don't remember, like, he and Vince Neil from Motley Crue got into a huge feud that resulted in Vince Neil going on MTV and challenging Axl Rose to a boxing match.
Oh my God.
This is where, like, the... cocaine just got like out of control. Like this was like, this was crazy. I mean, it was like, I remember watching and he was like, he's like, if you're listening, I'm challenging you to a fight. And I mean, it was like, it was just such a weird time.
That's nuts. It's like, incredible. I mean, cocaine's weird.
I still can't get over that he's like touring as the singer of AC/DC now.
Yeah.
I keep forgetting
so
that.
So weird.
Yeah.
Also remember Buckethead was part of Guns N' Roses when they first got together. I remember sitting down and watching that. Like I think it was the MTV Movie Awards or
Music Awards. they did that first
like
when it was just him reunion.
Time,
yeah, before he brought the full band back.
Yeah, and Buckethead was like, I was so captivated by Buckethead.
It's a very strange thing, but he's also a really
a
good
really
guitar
good
player.
Musician. Yeah. Like his solo stuff is really weird and really cool.
Yeah,
but it's just like why Buckethead? It was whatever. But like.
The thing is, Slash is sort of the outlier in that group because he's amazing. And,
he's very talented.
And I think he's like, I mean, he is one of the best guitar players. I think that it's unfortunate that he, you know, was sort of at the mercy of such a crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, Axl Rose is insane. And I mean, he's the craziest thing to come out of Indiana since Mike Pence. And I think that
he doesn't get booed at Cubs games.
I bet Axl Rose could see Hamilton in peace. But imagine like Kurt Cobain challenging like the lead singer of the Screaming Trees to a fist fight on MTV. It was like, we went from like 100 miles an hour to like 35 in the course of like just like 1 year. And it was, and I remember when my brother bought Nevermind and it was different. And it was one of the first times where I felt like, okay, this is mine. Mm-hmm. Like this is what speaks to me. Mm-hmm. And that's where like my taste and my brother's taste sort of started to bifurcate.
Well, I think we're even getting to a point now, like I still like Nirvana, but I talk to kids even younger than me who are like, yeah, Nirvana's kind of lame. Like they're very like squeaky clean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have a song about Write Me. It's like, oh, real edgy guys, like fucking open for Marilyn Manson. Like, but Marilyn Manson's another one where he's like super lame now. Like, I mean, even if you look back at his old, I love his music. I'm mm-hmm. a Marilyn Manson fan to death. But like, I think it's just like, I don't know if the hair metal thing is a matter of age.
Well, but think about it. Ozzy Osbourne used to be terrifying. Like when I was young, yeah. My brother used to play the song, it was Bloodbath in Paradise, which is about the Manson killings, mm-hmm. and it's creepy as hell if you were an 8-year-old.
Yeah.
When you're older, you listen to it, you're like, what the fuck? This is dork, like just completely lame. Why was I crying, scared to go to sleep?
I mean, Sabbath is cool as fuck.
It's because
Ozzy's
we're all numb
stuff,
and it's
like,
all been normalized to now. Nothing can scare us. Nothing can shock us.
Well, but at some
nothing
point,
edgy.
Oh, there's definitely stuff that can shock and make us edgy. It's just we just
in
get
music?
Angry at it. You know,
in music,
of course. There's always going to be something.
Still makes music that scares.
I still,
me.
You know what? I listen to Eminem's Kim, and I still get really upset.
Yeah, that I'm saying nowadays, Eminem's Kim. How long ago did that come out?
But I mean, the fact that lasts the test of time, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, that album came out what, 98, 99?
Yeah, like, but you sort of carry with it the feeling that you felt when you first listened
first
to that.
You
know
it,
what
yeah.
I mean? If you're somebody with like new ears who has never heard that, you might be like,
well, no, I mean, the rest of the album is just whatever
yeah.
to me, but Kim is a very upsetting song.
Yeah.
Like, it is, like, the audio of him just brutally murdering his wife is just upsetting. I don't care like who's listening to it. I think that's pretty objectively upsetting.
But if you look at like, but it's at some point like I just listened to Maron's interview with Marilyn Manson and it's just like, oh, you're just kind of a lame drunk.
He's just a boring guy.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, and but it's like he tries to make his life seem so interesting. It's like talking yeah. about like sex parties and it's just like, yeah, but like. It's like none of it's real.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah.
I mean? It's like you're just you're an image.
Mm-hmm.
And I think once you reach a point in your life where you sort of get over the image of like, I mean, I've interviewed like a bunch of musicians that I really like. And once you realize they're just people and they're just, you know, they have all the same problems you have.
Yeah.
Like I interviewed one of my favorite musicians and he was just like washing his dishes. And it's like, okay. And it's like, all right, like, come on. Like it's some point you're just like, ah, it's just a person doing a thing.
Well,
and
like
just
with Manson
to be edgy.
And a lot of the hair metal guys, I think there's a part of it is they don't want to get over their image either.
Yeah.
And like they kind of, that's where it becomes a situation like Axl Rose or Manson. Where
or
it's just
Guy Fieri.
I feel like Guy Fieri is 100% genuine. I think that is what Guy Fieri is off camera.
Well, you've seen the Shane Moss bit about him talking about like what.
I don't think so.
It's like Shane is a great comic, and I'm not going to like totally steal his bit, but his whole thing is like, what the fuck did Guy Fieri do to anybody? And here's a guy that just wants to make people happy, and everybody just shits on
him. He seems like a really nice guy.
And somebody made the point. Is like he makes the point that like Anthony Bourdain's a way bigger asshole than Guy Fieri. Sure. And so
that's why people like him.
Yeah, right. And so
you don't get on Archer without being an asshole.
I forgot about that. I haven't seen that in a while. I think it's any music that is based around like image. Mm-hmm. You couldn't pull off Kiss now. You know,
try to make money off that shit.
And that's something again, like that. My brother was huge into Kiss, but that was something I never understood the appeal of.
I saw them.
I was into Kiss.
I saw them with Buck Cherry about almost 10 years ago. Oh, and it's one of the worst concerts I've ever been to.
Well, first of all, you just admitted that you saw Buck Cherry.
I barely saw Buck Cherry. I got free tickets.
Oh, okay.
I was like, I got free tickets to go see Kiss. I got to see Kiss. Why can't it? What? Like, it's like something you have to do, you know, right? Like, and I'm like, no,
how we said earlier about people like you for who you are and that image. So mm-hmm. A lot of times, like, it's like a fluid situation. Like, sometimes that image is one you should stay with. Sometimes you hold on to it for a little too long or a lot too long.
Right.
And then it just crashes and burns in everybody's face.
But. I think a lot of artists would do way better if they realized that at some point they're just a collection of greatest hits.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Especially bands like this.
Yeah. And I mean, like, to give you an example, I went to see Bob Dylan in Akron the other night. And
oh, was that the, God damn it. I didn't want to go see that.
And it was, you know, he's famous for basically like completely gutting and rearranging his songs. Mm-hmm. And so none of his concerts are really the same. He has an amazing band and he's currently going through a phase where he's doing like Sinatra standards. So he would play like one song that was like
he did
a hit.
An album for AARP.
I mean, no, but it was like, but the thing about that concert, those songs were so good. And it, just his take on them. I mean, and he reached a point in his life where he just stopped caring what people fucking think. I mean, there were people in that concert hall that were furious. Mm-hmm. People walked out.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even like, I mean, Blowing in the Wind was unrecognizable.
Yeah.
But at some point he just realized, like, I don't really owe anybody anything.
He's been doing the same songs for 70 years. I don't blame him.
Right. Like, and it's like, at some point he's just entertaining himself. But it's like, some artists like him, you should buy into the idea that you're going to go in there and maybe experience something different.
Yeah.
There was a guy behind us, like where we were sitting, who was like, play more rock. And it was like, fucking shut up, dude. Like, this
you went
is
to
a,
the wrong concert if you asked Bob Dylan to play rock.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, he would do like Things Have Changed and then he did like Balance Within. I mean, he didn't, it took you like a minute into the song before you realized, oh, that's what he's singing. I mean, it was
he's
fascinating.
He's like probably one of my favorite musicians, and like I've never seen him live, and I've heard nothing but notoriously horrible things about his live shows. And like every time I hear it, it's like, oh yeah, he just fucks up his own songs. I'm like, no, just the way people talk about him, like, no, he's just rearranging them. He's just making them interesting to himself.
But see, that's a really unfair expectation of somebody who listens to music, because you know it's. You know, artists really don't owe the audience anything. You know what I mean?
Well, I guess it's kind of counterintuitive to what we were just saying earlier, where it's like, yeah, if I play pour some sugar on me all the time because that's what I
but it wants. But it is. But I mean, but some bands are that. You know, he's not that. You know, and it's
he's an artist.
If you knew anything about him, your expectations would be very different.
Yeah.
What I know about Def Leppard is they're a band that likes to play their hits.
Yeah.
And you know. They'll play like four songs off their new shit, but they know what you came there to hear. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you're a real Bob Dylan fan, you know what's up and you're going to go in there and you're going to, you know, you're going to understand what's happening,
yeah.
You know, and that's why it's like all, you know, are like the Bob Dylan songs that they play on the radio.
Tom Waits phase he had.
Like, yeah, you're not listening to, like, you know, his Christian phase.
Oh, that's pretty bad, though.
some of those albums aren't terrible, but, you know, I mean...
When someone has the fire to continue being an artist, you should not try to, like, extinguish that. Like,
and him, who literally invented a subgenre of music, who... like, revolutionized things, who introduced us to the band.
Just below the Beatles when you think of music.
Right, you know, and so it's fascinating to me to sort of consider, like, this idea between, like, artist and audience expectations. And, you know, people who are fans of Def Leppard really, you know, they're there for the singles. Yeah. And it's I don't know. I just, like, I walked out of that Dylan concert because it was the first time I'd ever seen him. Mm-hmm. And I was, like, beaming. And the dude I was with was like, well, you know, it was, you know, he was – but it was interesting what my friend said because he's also a big music nerd. He was like, nobody else could pull this off. And it's like, you know, that's a guy who has done the work and who has the artistic license to basically go up and just be whatever the fuck he wants to be. Yeah, and that's, you know, and that's got to be a satisfying place to be in as a musician.
I'd love to see Def Leppard go up and just be like, we're going to do Pour Some Sugar on Me as Sinatra.
We're going to croon it.
Pour Some Sugar on Me.
I don't know. That's Sinatra.
That's like Shatner.
Pour Some Sugar on Me.
There you go. It's way better.
Yeah.
Go fire me up.
Fire me up.
let's get into final opinions, unless you guys have anything else to say.
I don't.
No? Devin, you got anything?
I mean, I didn't grow up listening to much hair metal.
You seem like a hair metal fan. You got that perm on the top.
A lot of people say that. A lot of people say that. And it makes sense. It honestly makes sense. I wear tight pants. But
don't call me a tight pants.
Didn't listen to a lot of Def Leppard. I've never listened to a whole album. I'd heard some of the hits. I was actually, like, the first half of the album, I was, like, making dinner and stuff and listened to it while making dinner and kind of, like, when you're doing something and just, like, it felt good when it was energetic like that. And I don't know if there's a specific time of year you should be listening to it. A specific year.
This is Gene Shorts kind of music.
Like
seasonal leopard for the holidays.
Yes.
Christmas standards by Def Leppard.
But it's tough for me to say without more inspection that the entire band of Def Leppard is a miss for me. I want to listen to their earlier stuff and the breakthrough album. What was it?
Pyromania.
I was going to say Paranoia.
Hysteria and paranoia.
Yeah. I don't know. This was, at least this album overall was like, it hit the board, but it, I don't know if
hit
I need
that
to
white
listen
part
to it again.
Of the board where it's like just before the bullseye or the arrows hit.
Exactly. Yeah. It's
the colors
it's,
start showing up.
It's going to score me some points, but overall I probably wouldn't listen to it. Yeah. Again, because the second half.
I mean, this was like.
I will listen to more Def Leppard.
Yeah,
probably.
You think so?
I'll probably listen to Pyromania. All
right. Well, since this is the only one that's not on Google Play,
and I'll watch all the music videos.
Oh, here's a weird thing. Where did you listen to it at?
I got the album, and I just put it on the Google Drive for him.
Okay, because here's a weird thing. They got into this weird royalty dispute over streaming. And they re-recorded all their albums.
I was going to say, because I saw they have just one song from Hysteria re-recorded in 2013 or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's weird. I'll listen to this. And it was just one song. And I'm like, well, fuck. I mean, I guess I'm going to have to steal it.
I totally spaced on that. That, like, yeah, if you listen to this on, like, a streaming service or something, like, they literally went in so they could collect the streaming royalties. They re-recorded everything.
Oh, wow.
And so it's, like, them now doing these old songs. So it doesn't sound anything like the original album. So I was just
I
like...
I would be interested to hear that. I'm sure it's pretty lame.
It's not good.
No? Okay. I mean, like, I just feel like, you know, you've been playing it for 20 years. You've probably got it down.
Yeah, they're but just, I mean, like, laying the down while recording it.
Yeah. I don't know. I think this is a miss for me I genuinely, I still always kind of love Pour Some Sugar on Me. Like, it's so dumb. It's good drinking music.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
there's something party about music, it, like, it's just like the drum beat and the rhythm of it, and just it's so funny that it's about cum. Like, but I like women. I like the riff at the beginning. I think Rocket is there's a good minute and a half of Rocket in the center of that song that just could be taken out because it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah,
I didn't.
And
mind
he's like guitar, drums, and neither of those things happen when he says it. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you doing? But I mean, like, I don't know. I just don't get hair metal. I like Maiden. That's yeah. about it. Like, I never got Motley Crue. I never got Guns N' Roses. Just all of it was just it's. You know, I came up with like I went from like mushroom head to black metal. like all of my music taste is very like just very a large gap in between. Now starting in my 20s to figure out what was in between that. But I mean, hair metal is definitely not for me.
But that was like, it's interesting because that dynamic sort of existed at the time because mm-hmm. there was like the real metal dudes, yeah, and then like there were Venom these guys and,
yeah.
who were just like, fuck those guys, you know, those are the pretty boys and yeah. we're the thing, you know, we're legitimate. So it's like your attitudes.
Yeah, it was always more of a thrash guy.
Yeah, you know? So your attitudes are sort of like very in line with like sort of how they were perceived at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's again like. It's you look at a whole genre and you're like, that's not for me, but I think you look at the musicality.
I mean, if someone, I mean, honestly, I've never sat down to listen to a Motley Crue album. I've never sat down to listen to like a Poison. I've listened to Van Halen's like greatest hits. I'm like, I'm okay with Van Halen. Like
those early Van Halen albums are amazing.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's some solid fun drinking songs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like. If I can get in the right mindset of just like, okay, well, I'm just going to have, you know, I'm going to have a beer, cook a hot dog. Mm-hmm. Like, because that's really what I associate this kind of music with, which is fine because my next door neighbor does it. Yeah. My next door neighbor blares this kind of music in a bonfire in December. Like, so, I mean, like, I'm, you know, I get it. I hear it all the time and I'm cool with it. But like,
I'm only going to listen to Panama while I cook hot Panama. Dogs
from now.
But look, have you watched the second season of Stranger Things yet?
Yeah.
Okay, so in that second episode, they used the song Shout at the Devil mm-hmm. by Motley Crue.
Yeah.
That's an amazing song, and yeah. it is so, like, that party scene was so well executed.
How dare he not know who Susie and the Banshees were?
Oh, that bummed me out.
That made me so... You were listening to fucking Talking Heads.
Right?
You pretentious piece of shit.
Yeah, come on. Just go down one more rung and you're like right at Susie and the Banshees. So.
Yeah, that made me mad. But that season was pretty solid overall. No, but yeah. I mean, like, I've heard Motley Crue songs.
Mm-hmm.
I like certain songs. But I've never just listened to, like... All right, what do you got for me? Like, if you had to list out what you got for me, give me an album, you know, like. Mm-hmm.
But the point I was trying to make about that song in mm-hmm. that scene is that that scene like perfectly sort of captured who would have been listening to that music when it would have been played at that time.
Yeah, and he's the absolute worst person in the world,
right? And so it's like it's. I mean, you sort of get a sense of like what it was for and who it was for at yeah. that time. You know, it was a lot of like disaffected,
yeah.
dirtbag teenagers, basically. A lot of wispy mustaches listening to that music, man.
Working out with a cigarette in his mouth.
That look. Dude cracked me the fuck up. He was so
he's
funny.
So terrible.
He's like, so like
he adds nothing to the story.
I love
either.
Those characters and things, though. Like. It's why I love Leo Johnson in Twin Peaks. It's the same reason why I loved this dude in Stranger Things. It's just because he's going to say outrageous, illogically mad things mm-hmm. for 50% of his lines or more.
Someone,
he's like a Karate Kid villain, you know?
Yeah,
it's like, exactly. Yeah, it's
really
like, you're there, but it's like... But also his story petered out in a weird way. And
yeah.
He never
which I think,
really had one.
Well, like, I mean, they had weird scene with his dad, and it was like, well, you think it's going to go somewhere, and
yeah.
then it's just like... My guess is that they'll expand on it in the third season,
almost like
maybe. But
he was only an excuse to supply a car at the end.
We need a narrative device. Go back and write the whole thing again.
After watching like American Beauty, like I was expecting a whole like in the closet storyline.
There had to have been something. I'm sure there's going to be something in season three, but it's weird. I don't want to get into spoilers only because people are really touchy about Stranger Things.
Here's how it ends. Def Leppard comes out and plays a blistering 3-hour concert.
And not old Def Leppard.
And then all of the Ghostbusters come out and dance. Well, Chris, thank you for coming on.
No, thank you for having me. This was great.
Yeah, it was fun. You got anything you want to plug?
Yeah, when he...
No, I'm actually like I'm taking a break.
Post plug.
Yeah. I'm sort of like burned out from the comedy festival I did last week.
When are you beginning work at Flyover Comedy Fest for next year?
We started yesterday. It was like we were on such a high from like how unexpectedly amazing it turned out that we were like, let's start now. I mean, we're a nonprofit, so we're going to be like we're seeking like some arts funding and stuff like that. So the sort of earlier we start the planning for that, the better. But mm-hmm. We found out it was amazing. We found out today that the largest venue that we had where Todd Barry performed has asked us to brand all of their upcoming comedy shows with Flyover Comedy Festival. It's like we may have just stumbled into like, you know, a second job, but which is what it feels like. But awesome. You know, I'm really thrilled about it, and we'll be putting out we have the dates on hold for next year, and so we'll be announcing all that soon, and people can start submitting. So it'll be great.
Awesome. That's you got a Twitter or anything you want to plug?
I'm at Chris Wernowski, KRISWERNOWSKY.
Yeah, I'll have fun trying to type that in when I put it in the show notes.
Yeah, right.
Drunk.
Yeah.
You should just like copy paste everything.
Just go on Facebook and type it and just copy paste it.
Well, no, copy paste it and send it to me, and then I'll edit it for
That's
you.
That's true. I'm very bad at it. I'm very bad at spelling and grammar.
It's not that you're bad.
I'm very good
it's
at telling you about Quentin Tarantino movies.
Yes. Yes. Always have somebody read behind you. That's the golden rule.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's enough making fun of me and my spelling. I'm done. I'm done with it. George is done with it.
Nice.
Devin, you got anything? You got buttholes to blog or anything?
I mean, I'm going to keep the buttholes I have to plug. That's going to be a private thing that I don't say on the airwaves.
Well, we'll talk about it off air.
Yeah, I'll let you know privately. But other than that, just follow me at NewsOnDevin on Twitter, at Devin Newsom on Instagram, because I got to make it confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And then follow us at Second Shot Pod on all platforms. SecondShotPod@gmail.com if you want to submit.
Audio Boom, I changed the name finally.
Oh, nice.
You figured out how to do it.
Second shots.
My Twitter handle and all that crap is very confusing. It's Makeout Champion on Instagram, at George Dunham on Twitter, and then just George Dunham Facebook, secondshotpod@gmail.com, all that good stuff. I'm on Slurmcast. I don't know when that's coming out. It might be next week. I talked about Teenage Mutant Leela Hurdles. the episode where they all turn into little kids. It's an interesting episode. We talk a lot about Chinese buffets. other than that, I don't think I have anything else. So follow us on all that crap. Like, subscribe, call us at a number that I keep forgetting to put in. I'll put in the show notes. Gail, please call us again.
Gail, yeah. If you want to go to the book club in the puzzle room, check that out. And Above Below ENT also. Check out Above Below on Audio Boom. All social media platforms. Got a lot of good shows on there. Fantasy Boys,
Teachy's Devils.
Ad Hominem Attack Show.
Ad Hominem. I think that's it, right?
Are we forgetting somebody?
Probably, and we're assholes.
I'll fear really bad.
The number, by the way, is 216-309-0942. I got to start remembering that, but I can't remember anything because I'm a millennial. We will see you guys next week, or even maybe tomorrow, because we might be talking about the Justice League.
Oh yeah, I'm really excited about that.
We'll see if we're I'm still trepidatious, even the good reviews are coming out. Chris, again, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
We will see you guys next week.
Peace.
Bye. We'll be right back.
Hey, Bruce, this is Gail from the book club. We're going to have book club tomorrow at 4 o'clock in the puzzle room.